It's Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark LeBonier. Continuing series in this hour, later on, it's The Adventures of Marco Polo, Firefighters, The Man in the Iron Mask from 1948, but first, the concluding episode in a five-part series of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. It's The Lorco Diamonds Matter, Part 5, from November 11th, 1955, on CBS.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Johnny, this is Maria.
Maria? Well, isn't it kind of late at night to call?
You've got to help me, Johnny. I'm being followed.
You're being... Aren't you at home?
No, it's a little cafe on the waterfront. I came in here to phone...
Why the devil did you have to go out? Everything was set up. If you'd stayed home, you'd have been safe. What are you trying to do? Get yourself killed?
Johnny, this is no time...
Where are you? What's the name of the place?
The Marrakesh, number 41 Rue de la Mer. I'm afraid to go outside.
No, whatever you do, don't go outside. Stay right where you are until I get there.
But Johnny...
Take your choice, Maria. It's either that or wind up on a marble slab.
What do you mean?
You know what I mean. You know better than anybody. Now stay there.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Algiers, North Africa, to the home office Transworld Fidelity Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Lorco Diamonds Matter. $100,000 in jewels stolen and a murder. Expense account continued. Item 12, $2.20. Taxi fare to the waterfront of the Marrakesh Cafe. There was no time to lose and no time to get help from Inspector Marcus. A half hour earlier, he'd set a trap, and he and his men were staked out around Maria's apartment house waiting. But apparently, she'd gone to the cafe before he got there. So now the whole thing had blown wide open. Rue de la Mer was a dead-end street close to the water, deserted at this hour of night. A couple of dim street lights and a light over the door of the Marrakesh Cafe. Everything else was in darkness. There was no movement, no sign of life.
Over here, Johnny. Oh, thank heaven you got here.
No trouble so far,
No, except with that sailor over there. He finally passed out.
Well, you're probably used to that kind of trouble. Cigarette?
Yes, thank you.
Now, what were you doing down here at this time of night?
I was visiting a friend.
Is that the friend's car parked out at the curb?
Yes.
Charlie Barrett, huh? The meat packer from Chicago who was going to give you the Lorco Diamonds. Well, I figured he'd get over his man spell.
How did you know about it?
He told me just before I knocked him out for the second time tonight. He said you two had a fight over a week ago, and that he told you he wasn't buying any diamonds after all.
Well, it was just...
For a while, I thought I had you tagged again. I wondered why you hadn't canceled the order when you'd been told he wasn't going to pay for the stuff.
Johnny, it was just a talk. I knew he would come around.
Yeah, well, that's about the way I figured it. Another explanation. So I let you off the hook again.
Why, Johnny? Why have you been trying so hard?
Trying what?
To find some way of involving me in this.
Well, the facts just seemed to turn up. I wasn't trying to find them.
It made a big difference, didn't it? Learning about Mr. Barrett.
Learning what about him?
That I was accepting a $20,000 gift from him.
Why should it? Your life's your own.
It did, though. Before that, you were... Well, seemed to be interested.
Sure. You're a very beautiful woman.
And that's all it was?
What more did you want?
All right, Johnny. Forget it. I don't blame you.
Hey, tell me something. What about Barrett? Now that you've kissed and made up, is the engagement back on again?
I haven't decided yet, Johnny.
Well, come on. Let's get out of here. I'll take you home.
Do you think it's safe?
There was no sign of anybody around when I came in. Whoever it was probably got scared off.
Oh, I was scared to death. When I saw the lights of the cafe, I jammed on the brakes and ran for the door. There, the car was right behind me.
Get a look at the driver?
No.
How'd you get hold of Barrett's car? Borrow it?
He gave it to me.
Not a bad night's work. It's a good car. Get in.
You really play rough, don't you, Johnny?
Sometimes. It depends on... Get down, quick, back of the car. It came from across the street. It's pitch black over there.
What are you going to do?
Look, Maria, you're safe as long as you're back of the car here.
Well, what about you?
I can't get a shot from here. I'm pinned down. I'm going to make a run for that stone curb. Try to draw a shot and see where the flash comes from.
Be careful, Johnny.
Oh, don't worry, kid. I'm the carefulest guy you ever saw. All right, now sit tight. Here goes.
Are you all right, Johnny?
Yeah, I think I got him spotted. Let's see just how close I get.
Is somebody running away?
Yeah, so do I. Now, where the devil? Why don't they get some streetlights down here?
That car that's starting up.
Yeah, I see it.
They're getting away.
One lucky shot, Mike. Ah. Give me your keys. Wait here. I'm going after
them. No, I'm going with you.
Then pile in. Hurry up. Let's go. A few blocks away, I picked up the taillights of the other car and poured on the gas to keep hanging on. We roared through the empty streets along the waterfront, then swung into the coast road and headed out of the city. The model I was driving had been built for road racing, and barring accidents, I didn't figure the car ahead had much chance of shaking me. It was a narrow, winding road following the rocky edge of the headlands, and the curves were sharp and dangerous, especially at the speed we were traveling. Finally, it happened. The car ahead roared up a steep grade and missed the curve at the top. It rolled over and over, the headlights cutting crazy patterns in the blackness as it plunged down towards the beach. I finally braked to a stop about 30 yards from the wreck, jumped out and started toward it, and just then... the gas tank caught and burst, and the car exploded into a tower of flames. I caught a glimpse of the driver pinned in the wreck. Then the fire took over and covered him, and I knew one thing was certain. He'd had it.
It's dying down.
Yeah. The gasoline is all burned down.
Oh, what a terrible way to die.
What way isn't?
I guess... Johnny, could I have a cigarette, please?
Yeah, sure. Here you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, light up, Maria, while you watch him burn.
What a horrible thing to say.
It's quite a relief, though, isn't it, knowing you're safe now?
Well, of course it's a relief when someone has just tried to kill you and now you know that they...
That's true, but it's not what I meant.
I don't think I understand you.
What I meant was you're safe because now he won't be able to talk.
Able to... Who won't be able? Do you mean you know who's in that car?
Of course, and so do you. It's the customs property agent, André Jardine.
André?
Sure. Who else would have any reason to kill you since he was the only one left after... Oh, I guess you haven't heard about it yet. Bobo's dead, too.
What? Who is Bobo?
Your other partner. André shot him in the back earlier tonight up in the Casbah. So you're doubly safe now, Maria. They're both dead. And for everything else, you've got an explanation. With just one exception.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, now, don't be modest. Actually, it was quite a scheme, whether you thought it up or André did.
Oh, you are out of your mind.
The idea was to make sure the Diamond Courier died, either on the plane or at least before he got through customs. That way, the courier's briefcase would be sent to André's office. Then Bobo was to help André fake the stick-up. But Bobo turned out to be a tough cookie.
This may be true,
but... Instead of sticking to plan, he decided to go for broke. When he slugged André, he tried to make it stick, but André managed to reach his gun, so he ended up in the hospital instead of the morgue.
What has all this got to do with me?
Then André got the idea of a double-cross. He left the hospital, went into the Casbah to look for Bobo. He found him. And he killed him.
I still don't see
His next step was a natural, to knock you off and keep the whole take for himself. We expected it, and we were ready for him. Inspector Marcus is staked out right now at your apartment house, waiting for André to show up. We didn't know you'd already gone out earlier.
Well, all of this may be true, Johnny. But why do you insist on trying to fit me into the picture?
Because that's where you belong. I mentioned the fact that you'd been able to come up with an explanation every time you needed it, with just one exception.
What exception?
Both André and Bobo have tried to kill you this evening. Why? Unless you were in on this thing, what reason would they have?
Well, I don't know. Of course. Why should I know? I don't know why they tried to kill me, Johnny.
Oh, a good answer, Maria. And it'll probably work. Yeah, you figure that one out fast.
I don't know what you
mean.
No,
of course you don't. Well...
Who has the diamonds?
I will, before morning.
Johnny, why couldn't you...
Knock it off, kid. You got the wrong guy. It won't work with me.
It could.
Sure, I know. You're beautiful, charming, lovely. And you're rotten. Rotten right to the core.
What are you doing, Johnny?
Going back to town.
Well, wait for me.
Goodbye, Maria.
Johnny, wait. Johnny!
An hour later, I was out at the air terminal in the customs property office watching Inspector Marcus open a vault.
Mon Dieu, what a nuisance. Always they make these combinations so difficult.
That's the general idea, Inspector.
True, but still one would think... There we are. Now, if you are correct, Monsieur Dallaire, we shall soon have our hands...
There, that briefcase in the corner.
Oui. It is the one.
Good. Let's have a look at it.
It will be necessary to force the lock.
Here, pry it open with this. Looks like an easy one.
It is merely a matter of... Voila. Ooh, beautiful, no?
Yeah, too beautiful.
Tell me something, Monsieur Dallaire. What made you know that André Jourdain was guilty?
Something Bobo said just before he died.
Hmm?
Yeah. He confessed he was the man who had slugged André. But André had described his assailant as tall and thin. Bobo was short with a stocky build. André had lied.
Mm. And all this time, the diamonds were right here in this vault to which André, as property agent, had access.
Can you think of a safer place? Hey, Inspector, what about Maria Dattoria?
Mm. Well, I am inclined to agree with you, Monsieur Dallaire, but...
Yeah, I know. Nothing but suspicion.
Yeah, precisely. If I were to file charges and bring her to trial on such evidence as this, well, she would cry a little, perhaps, and look very beautiful. And, monsieur, the court would hang me, not her.
Yeah, you're right. You could never make it stick.
C'est la vie.
Expense account item 13, $624.80. Hotel, meals, and incidentals in Algiers, and transportation back to the States. Expense account total, $1,214.60. End of expense account. End of report. Remarks? Social item, to be circulated widely. The Countess Maria Dattoria was married yesterday to C.K. Barrett, a big tycoon in the meat business. The happy couple will make their home in Chicago. All companies in that area who may be asked to underwrite insurance on the life of C.K. Barrett, don't. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, there'll be a new exciting story on Johnny Dollar beginning next Monday.
Next week, the Broderick matter, an exciting chase after a charming, beautiful girl. After all, who wouldn't? Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Les Crutchfield, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Lillian Baieff, Jack Moyles, Victor Perrin, C.K. Barrett, Lawrence Dobkin, Forrest Lewis, and Jay Novello. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday from November 11th, 1955 on CBS, wrapping up that storyline, the Lorco Diamonds Matter. And that particular day in the country marked the first year anniversary of Veterans Day being changed from Armistice Day, which had been in place since 1918 when World War I ended. This is an hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for The Adventures of Marco Polo. Episode 10 in a syndicated series from the 1940s.
Uh-huh. now present The Adventures of Marco Polo. Marco Polo was forbidden to accompany his father and his uncle to China. The young man was bitterly disappointed, but he realized the justice of his father's decision. The night before the Polos sailed from Venice, the Doge gave a great banquet in their honor, and many complimentary speeches were made. Marco Polo spoke and told of his deep shame and mortification at not being allowed to accompany his father and his uncle on their historic journey to China, a land which no white man had ever entered. Then Niccolo Polo, the father of Marco Polo, relented, and he announced that his son would accompany him on his journey. Eventually, the voyagers started, and without undue incident, they arrived at Yazdi, the capital of Persia. There, they were given royal greeting by the Khan of Persia, but he astounded them by saying that the great Kublai Khan would allow no white man to enter China.
But most high, did not bid us return here so that we could accompany a beautiful woman to China?
You said she was to become the wife of the great Kublai Khan.
You bade us return so that we could accompany this woman to China.
I know, but I have since communicated with my brother, Kublai Khan, and he says that although he is anxious to set eyes on this woman, he can wait until I send some of my soldiers to accompany her on the journey. He wants no white men in his land.
Most high, you made me a promise. When I enabled your soldiers to defeat the old man of the mountain, you swore that you would bestow any gift on me, any gift which I cared to name.
I did make that promise.
Then I beg that you keep that promise. Let my father, my uncle, and myself accompany this woman to China.
I would do that willingly, Marco Polo, but I have no desire to send you to your doom.
If we go to China, we do so at our own risk, mighty Khan.
My brother Kublai Khan has told me that he will slay any white man who comes to his land. Would it be gratitude if I sent you to certain death?
You made us a promise, noble Khan. I beg that you keep that promise.
Are you all decided, in spite of what I have said, that you will go to China?
I am willing to go to China.
My heart is set on going there.
I am ready to go to China now.
If I made a promise, I must keep it. You are three determined and courageous men. But I warn you, my brother Kublai Khan is a fierce and determined warrior. He has made himself the greatest Khan in the world. He slays all whom he considers his enemies.
Knowing that, we are still anxious to go to China. We go on a peaceful mission, and we beg that you allow us to accompany this princess who is to wed Kublai Khan.
So be it, my friends. It is not for me to try to shake your determination. You shall have one of my captains and six of my soldiers as an escort. The princess will be carried by four bearers in a silken litter. You will be responsible for her welfare. Take you this ruby ring, Niccolo Polo. Place it on your finger. If you are in danger, show those who threaten you this ring. But I doubt whether it will be effective. That is all I can do for you.
I thank you. We are willing to risk our lives. We will try to persuade Kublai Khan that we shall be his friends.
May we see the princess whom we are to escort to China?
You shall see her now. She will wear a gossamer veil over her face. But I warn you, the only man who is entitled to raise that veil is the great Kublai Khan, the man who is to be her husband. But even through the gossamer veil, you will be able to see her matchless beauty. Let the Princess Dilara be brought before me, and let Captain Naidu come with her. Now, my friends, be seated. The princess will soon enter. Captain Naidu will accompany you on this perilous journey to China. Bring wine and meat for the guests of the Khan of Persia. Refresh yourselves, my friends. You will rest here a few days before you undertake your journey.
We will rest here a few days, noble Khan.
The road to China is not free from robbers and scoundrels. You may encounter a fierce tribe of men called the Koronas. They are dark-skinned scoundrels and makers of magic. Many times have I tried to defeat them, but always have I failed.
Tell us something of these Koronas, so that we may be on our guard.
And what magic do they make, O Most High?
On the journey to China, you will have to cross the plain of Kianaman. This is a dry and arid waste of land, and at certain seasons of the year, there are fierce, heat-laden winds. Those winds whip up a thick dust, thicker than any fog, so that the eye cannot see more than a few feet. Out of that dust-laden fog come the Koronas. and it is said that they cause these dust storms so that they can creep upon their enemies unawares. When the dust is thick, when the heat is intolerable, be on guard against the coronas.
We will be on our guard.
I cannot give you more than 6 soldiers as an escort. They are men well skilled in the art of warfare, well trained in the use of the bow and the arrow. Princess Delana comes now. Have you ever seen such grace of form and figure, my friends? Come, Delana. These are the men from the west of whom I have spoken. They will escort you to China.
But Most High did not say that it was unsafe for these men to go to China.
I have told them that, but they are brave and resolute men. They will go with you to China. You will be in their charge. You'll be leaving in a few days.
Most noble princess, I swear that our lives will be dedicated to taking you safely to the great palace of Kublai Khan.
You are kind, sir.
Come forward, Captain Naidu. These men from the west are my friends. You will journey with them to China, taking 6 of your men. You will guard over them and treat their lives as you would treat all friends of your Khan.
I will obey, most noble Khan. But will 6 men be enough to guard the princess and your friends on this arduous journey? Enough to fight off the attacks of the Coronas?
I can spare no other men. Come, Zilana, be seated. Speak with the men from the west.
I must express my admiration of your bravery, princess. Only a brave woman would undertake this arduous journey.
I will be well guarded, noble sir.
I swear to that. With my life, I shall defend you.
Bravely spoken. Now, Zilana, you may withdraw. I will tell you when the journey is to commence. And remember, you are the promised bride of the great Kublai Khan. And he alone has the right to raise that veil and look upon your face.
I will remember that.
Go now. I wish to speak with my friends. Captain Naidu, you will bring a map and discuss the road which you will take.
I will be glad to discuss that with Captain Naidu. We have already made certain plans, but he will know more about this journey than we do.
I have been many times to China, sir. I will tell you of my scheme, that we will have to be on our guard night and day. It is no easy task which you're undertaking.
Aye, we know that. We are prepared to face any risk, any danger.
Forget about your journey now. Captain Naidu will make all arrangements for it. You will eat, drink, and be merry with me, my friend.
For several days, the pearlers stayed at the palace of the Khan of Persia. Then at last, they were ready to depart on their journey. By orders of the Khan, the entire population of Yazdi had been gathered together to bid farewell to the travelers. A great crowd gathered near the city gates. Veiled Persian women jostled with bearded men trying to look at the intrepid adventurers. Just prior to their departure from the palace, Niccolo, Matteo, and Benno were waiting for Marco.
Where is Marco? He knows that we're ready to depart. Look, there is the litter of the princess being carried down the steps of the palace.
Oh, the princess is not yet in the litter. See, the silken curtains are raised.
Perhaps she is taking farewell of the Khan. But Marco should be here. He knows we're ready to leave.
Oh, Benno, do you know where he can be found?
Well, master, he will be here soon.
That is no answer, Benno. I ask you if you knew where the Master Marco can be found.
No doubt he is on his way to us now, Master Niccolo.
Benno, my brother asked you a question, and you evaded the answer. Where is Master Marco? Come now, let us have a truthful answer.
Oh, Master Marco will not keep us waiting very much longer.
That is not an answer to my question, Benno. Where is Marco?
Did someone mention my name?
Marco, where have you been? We are ready to depart.
Crowds are waiting at the gates of the city. The Khan wishes to bid us farewell.
Well, I did not leave the palace.
Benno knows where you've been.
And noble Benno kept his peace and did not tell.
It was a hard task, Master Marco.
Marco, will you tell me where you've been?
I have been talking with the Princess Zilana. Her litter has been carried to the foot of the palace steps. She is ready to leave now. We had much to talk about. I was telling her of some of the wonders of the Western world.
You've been spending too much time with the princess lately. The Khan does not like it.
Remember, Marco, she is the promised bride of the great Kublai Khan.
And she is the most beautiful woman I have ever seen.
But she wears a gossamer veil, Marco.
How can you tell the princess is beautiful?
The veil is transparent. She has a voice like a cooing dove, white fluttering hands that have clutched my heart.
Marco, we are about to undertake a perilous journey to China. We have won the friendship of the Khan of Persia. Would you imperil our lives by philandering with the promised bride of the great Kublai Khan? If you speak with her again, I shall send you back to Venice.
Oh, Father, Father, we cannot undertake this great journey in silence. I must be polite to the princess.
You will bring us all to our deaths, Marco.
Oh, be of good cheer, Uncle Matthew. We will arrive in China safely, and the princess will prove a pleasant companion.
Marco, I pray that you listen to me. I am worried. You must not pay so much attention to the princess.
She is a lady of royal rank, and she has been placed under my charge for this journey. I must relieve the tedium of the journey for her. Now come, come, smile. A cherished dream is about to come true.
All the trumpets have sounded.
That means that the time has come for our departure. The princess is about to step into her litter.
Then come, my friends. We start on the last and most dangerous stage of our journey to China.
Episode 10 of The Adventures of Marco Polo, a syndicated episode from the 1940s. Moving on, in this hour of series on Tuned to Yesterday, we now bring you episode 16 in the Firefighters series from December 5th, 1949.
Five bells. Stand by all stations.
Attention, all districts. A five-alarm fire. Five bells. Move in immediately.
That's it. Let's roll. Let's go. Firefighters! Presenting Firefighters. The true-to-life story of our unsung heroes who stand ready to ride by day or night against our most murderous enemy, the demon of fire. In just a minute, we'll join Chief Cody and Tim Collins, rookie firemen, in the cold glare of the floodlight at the rear of the burning tenement building, where an unconscious woman lies across the sill of a top-floor window. If she is to be saved, Tim Collins must move fast. Let's go, firefighters. Let's go to the scene of the tenement fire where, you remember, Tim Collins and Chief Cody suspect that Dapper Joe Ferguson knows more than any honest man should know about the origin of the blaze. Just a moment ago, the firefighters learned that Mrs. Ferguson is trapped in the top floor of the tenement at the rear of the burning building, and Ferguson cries out,
Chief Cody! My wife, she's up there still. I thought she got out. I thought she got out safe like the rest.
Everybody else got out safe, Ferguson. It'd be strange if the only one we lost should
be... No, Chief. You gotta save me. Look, I got money. I'll give you all I got.
We don't need your money for doing our duty, Ferguson.
No, take it, Chief. Take it. Look, it's the insurance policy.
Huh? Let me see that.
Sure. The insurance on my furniture. $500, Chief. As soon as I collect the money for what got burned up, you can have it.
Ready for the scaling ladder, Chief.
That's enough from you, Ferguson. I'll see you later.
No, listen. You gotta listen to me. I don't care what happens to anybody else. I don't care what
happens. That's enough, you. Now get back there and keep still.
Yes, sir. Yes, Chief. Yes, sir, I will.
Collins.
Ready, sir.
Send that woman down to us on the lifeline. There's not much time. Now, when it comes your turn to come down...
Stand by with the net, sir. That's all I ask.
All right, Tim. You have your scaling ladder. You know what to do.
Yes, sir.
Good luck, and up you go. You men with that hose. There's a man going up. Wash down those buildings next door. But watch it. Man on the ladder.
And a good man, too, Chief. One of the best.
What's that?
I said one of the best, Chief. Look at him climb. Now, me, I don't like a scaling ladder.
You climbed on one often enough, Murphy.
Keep on going, Hooksy. Only two more floors. Oh, sure, sure, Chief. Often enough. But what I like is a real ladder, not one of those poles with the rungs sticking out on each side like a fish pole with handles on it all the way along.
Watch him go. Straddle the windowsill. That's right. Pull up the pole.
Reach it up overhead. Clinch the hook over the windowsill above him, and up he goes like a monkey.
Murphy, we're out of our minds standing here like this.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'll go get the net for Hooksy. Hey, that Ferguson.
Huh? Where is he?
Slipped away whilst we were watching Hooksy Collins.
I'll get him when I want him. Call that rescue squad, Murphy. Bring the net.
Yes, sir.
Oh, man, it's hot here. This place won't stand much longer. Floors are due to collapse. Now, straddle the sill. There. Pull up the ladder. Heavy. My arms are heavy. Run her up so the hook goes in the window above. Now, this is the risky one. She's lying half over the sill. Can I get the hook on the sill without hurting her? Careful now. Ease it down slow and up. Oh, she's moving.
Mrs. Ferguson, can you hear me? Mrs. Ferguson, move to one side. Get off that sill.
There goes the hook. And here goes Collins.
There. Mrs. Ferguson, where are you? Oh, good grief. She wandered back into that smoke. I'll have to go in after her. Oh, it's all right, Mrs. Ferguson. This is the fire department. Now, look, I'm going to send you down to the men on the ground. I've got to put this rope around you. There. Now we snub the end around this iron bedstead here. There. Ready below.
Let her come.
Now, Mrs. Ferguson, can you hear me?
Joseph, I don't you understand? It's just the gambling. The gambling makes him do terrible things.
Huh? Oh, look. Look, Mrs. Ferguson, try to understand what I'm saying. Can you hold the lifeline here with your hands?
Oh,
good grief. She's dropped off again. Well, never mind. Look, if you can hear me, Mrs. Ferguson, don't be afraid. I'm going to let you down like a dozen eggs in a basket. You won't feel a jar.
Hurry it up there.
Here she comes.
Chief, the net. We can't spread the net in that angle.
One thing at a time. Get that woman down safe.
First aid! Bring the stretcher!
Don't be frightened, Mrs. Ferguson. You're almost down to the ground. Ready with the blanket, first aid. She got singed coming past those windows. The fire's working through to the rear.
Okay, Collins. Throw her away. Slack that rope. We got her now.
What's that she's saying?
Joe, you're not really bad. You just do such terrible things.
Something about Joe, Chief Cody.
Poor woman. That husband of hers will break her heart when she comes to. Turn her over to the first aid boys, Murphy. Yep.
All right, here's your package, first aid. Take her away.
Collins! Can you hear me?
Ready with the net!
Collins, we can't open the net in this angle. No room! No room!
Hey, Chief Cody! The stairs have collapsed. The floors are getting ready to go.
Collins can't get through to the front of the building where the ladders could reach him. We can't spread the net for him under that window because the other building backs up too close.
The lifeline, Chief. If he comes down in the lifeline.
Look at the flame through those windows below him. The woman just barely got past. He'd be burned to a crisp if he tried it now. Oh, if he could...
Up below!
Hey, look, Chief. What? He's reached his ladder straight across to the next window.
No, past it. He's hooked the sill on the corner window. Now, what in blazes?
He's going to swing. He's going to try to swing on the ladder. Chief, if he...
Rescue squad. Get that net spread right here. If the ladder swings him out far enough, we can push him.
Below. Here I go.
He's swinging out, Chief. He's out of the angle. Watch your grip on that net. Here he comes. Go. Goodbye.
Murphy. Murphy, get him out of this.
Come on, boy. Come on. You made it, Hooksy. You flew like a bird.
Searchlights. Kill that light. Pull out and fast. Hose company, this building is going to fall. Now give me water and close in when she falls.
Come on, Foxy boy. Time to get out of here.
Lean on me.
The woman.
Lean on me.
She's all right, Murphy? The flame from the windows. She's all right?
Sure, sure, kid. She's fine. She's sleeping like she was in her own bed over at first aid.
All companies pull back. You truckmen, save your ladders. Back. Back across the street. All commanders, pull back. Save your ladders.
Back. Get that crowd back. She's going to fall. There she goes. There goes the floor.
There she goes.
Over here, Chief Cody. Here at first aid.
Well, Collins.
Yes, sir.
I was looking for you. Any damage?
Oh, no, sir. She collapsed into the street. Hose 209 knocked down the embers. Looked as if they'd spread into those little shops over there, but they...
Yes, I know. I've got eyes. The whole street is blocked with wreckage. But the boys will take care of that. I mean, any damage to you?
Oh, no, Chief. Only this.
Great blistering blazes. What's that, mittens?
First aid wrapped up my hand, sir. A couple of scratches when I swung out on that ladder.
A couple of scratches? When I thought you were going to break your neck. Well, all's well that ends well, if it ends at all.
Yes, sir.
Now, where's that Ferguson? I want to put an end to him.
Murphy went scouting for him, Chief Cody. He'll bring him here, if he can find him.
Hey, Officer Martin. Tom, have you seen a short, wide little rascal with a... Well, what do you know?
Put him down.
And who are you? Them's my suitcases. I left them here. I ought to know.
Well, now, if that's the case, maybe you can identify them two bags. Maybe you can tell me what's in them.
Sure I can. This one, the heavy one, that's my tools for my trade. I'm a mechanic when I'm working. And this one here, this is my clothes, mine and my wife's.
Oh, now, if you're telling the truth, that's easy found out. Before I'm asking you to open them two bags, tell me another thing.
Listen, it's cold. It's late. It's almost morning. You're supposed to be here watching a fire line. Go watch it and lay off people that lost everything they own in the fire.
Lost everything they own, is it? Except maybe a couple of suitcases that just happened to be sitting behind a signboard across the street. Well, now, Chief Cody might be interested in a sad case like yours, mister. Murphy, will you look what I got here?
I've seen him before, Tom. And I've got a hunch Chief Cody does want to see him again. Bring him along, Officer Martin, and let him carry those bags along, too.
There isn't much doubt that Joe Ferguson is implicated in the case of the tenement fire from which 12 families were rescued in the nick of time. But to prove Ferguson guilty of setting the fire is the problem that confronts Chief Cody and Tim Collins, rookie firemen. Keep step with this important investigation in our next True to Life episode of The Firefighters. In just a minute, Chief Bob Cody will tell you, boys and girls, how you can help the firefighters in your own hometown. And now, Chief Cody, with a special assignment for all young firefighters. Chief Cody.
Hello, boys and girls. This is Chief Cody, and here is your special assignment. You are to examine your local newspaper for a report of fires for the last 24 hours. Read this report and note whether or not any false alarms have been pulled. Remember, a false alarm is a safety hazard, and to pull a false alarm is a disgraceful as well as a criminal act. So check up on the report of fire alarms in your community and do your part to keep that record clear of false alarms. That is all, firefighters. Goodbye for now.
Fire Chief Cody and the young rookie fireman Tim Collins will be back on the same station the next time you hear...
That's it. Let's roll! Let's go! Firefighters!
Firefighters on Tuned to Yesterday, episode 16 in a relatively long syndicated run from December 5th, 1949. Now, to close out this hour of series, it's The Man in the Iron Mask with Episode 12, a syndicated broadcast from 1948.
The Man in the Iron Mask.
Marchioli is finally convinced that all efforts have been made to try and find his beloved Marguerite without any success. So broken-hearted, he returns with his guardian, Georges Saint-Marc, to their estate in Gascogne. Here, Frasquita Carlos presents herself. She has been made in waiting to Maria Teresa, Infanta of Spain, and has been forced to flee because it has been discovered that she sold a Spanish secret to the French ambassador. With her, she has letters from the tender-hearted Maria, who has always been fond of her. These letters beg Georges Saint-Marc to do what he can for her. And when Frasquita is shown into the great living room of the Saint-Marc castle, she is amazed to see what she believes to be a portrait of King Louis XIV. But she is told by the lackey that this is the ward of Georges Saint-Marc. The lackey then leaves her as she stares in great surprise at this portrait.
But this is absurd. I have seen that portrait so often. It is the King of France, Louis XIV. And yet, what is the King of France doing here? Perhaps this is his home where he lives incognito when he so wishes. Oh.
You are Senorita Carlos?
Yes, senor. And you?
I am Georges Saint-Marc. I'm happy to meet you. This letter speaks very highly of you. I trust the Infanta as well.
Very well, and very happy at the thought of coming to France. But you have heard, of course, senor.
Yes, yes. A great surprise. That is why I'm a little mystified now. You belong to her suite, I understand. I thought perhaps that you would have gone with her.
Oh, no, senor. I left the service of Maria Teresa because I dislike the court life. I like a country life. That is why, when I said I was traveling through Gascogne, that Her Highness suggested that I call on you. Unfortunately, although I am a lady of quality, I have very little money, senora. I think it is better to be quite frank.
Well, it seems so strange you leaving security to come to a strange country.
Well, there is something else of which I would prefer not to speak. It is an affair of the heart, if you understand.
Oh, but of course I do now. I trust you will not take the matter too seriously, whatever it may be.
No, of course not. Senor, Her Highness thought perhaps that you, with your influence, might be able to recommend me in some French house. I have always been an excellent companion for Her Highness.
Oh, there would be no trouble. I can assure you that to be with the suite of the Infanta of Spain is the highest credential you could carry. In fact, mademoiselle, it is quite a coincidence that you have presented yourself here at such a time. Would you perhaps be interested in taking a position here? That of tutor to my ward?
Tutor?
Yes, it so happens that my ward may one day go to Spain.
Oh, now I can understand.
What?
Nothing. Nothing. Continue, senor.
He needs instruction in the Spanish language. As you are a lady of gentle birth, you must have the necessary educational qualifications. It is not, perhaps, as interesting a post as you would gain in Paris, but...
And is that your ward, the portrait over the fireplace?
Yes, mademoiselle.
But of course I accept, senor. It is an honor. Perhaps the greatest honor that we could bestow upon a stranger in a strange country.
Oh, not really.
Oh, I think so, and I am most humbly grateful, senor.
Colbert, we have not met for 2 days, and yet I've been so anxious to talk with you privately.
Yes, my Lord Cardinal. As you probably realize, there are a great many papers to be gone through.
Always the businessman, always the expert in such matters, but we will speak of business in a moment. Lackey, you may withdraw. Now that we're alone, tell me quickly. You carried out my instructions?
No, my Lord Cardinal.
What?
Let me continue, I pray. There was no need.
What do you mean?
When I went to the Bastille with the soldiers, we found that the job of work had already been done.
Don't tell me this girl was murdered in the Bastille by somebody else.
Oh, no, my Lord Cardinal. Apparently she died of a broken heart.
A broken heart?
Yes. She was dead when the warder went to get her.
Well, that makes it so much easier. Death by natural causes. I hope that was recorded.
Oh, yes, my Lord Cardinal, I saw to that. Also, I took the liberty of having a hurried funeral in the pauper's grounds. I knew you were anxious that all evidence be removed very quickly.
You are most astute, my dear Colbert. I will not forget to reward you suitably. So now all evidence is removed. Our young friend pines his heart away in Gascoigne. And the peasant farmer's daughter, well, her pining is at an end. Let us hope he keeps sacred her memory, for the longer he pines for his lost love, the less likely it will be that he will ever want to marry any other woman who crosses his path.
Edmund.
Oh, it's you, Uncle.
Edmund, you must rouse yourself. I opened this door and walked into the room and you weren't even conscious that I was here.
I'm sorry, Uncle.
But what were you thinking?
My thoughts were miles away.
Edmund, dear boy, you will have to forget her. Surely you will not allow this infatuation to ruin your life.
There will never be anyone else. Oh, Uncle, it's so hard. The greatest torture of all is the uncertainty. If only I knew the truth. What has really happened to her? Who were those soldiers?
And it is my wish that you study another language.
Another language?
I have interests now in a Spanish estate. It may be that I'll need you to help me in the management of this estate. It is most necessary that you learn to speak Spanish fluently.
I don't care what I do.
No. Time's a great healer, and with your new occupation, you might find yourself again. Now, come with me. There's a lady I would like you to meet.
A lady?
Yes. A very beautiful, dark-eyed senorita. She comes from Spain, from the court of the Infanta Maria Teresa.
But what is she doing here?
She is here to teach you Spanish. So come.
You seem very determined that I should learn this new language. I think I know your motives, Uncle. You want to help me to help myself. You want my mind to be occupied. That's very kind of you. I don't want to do anything but sit here and think of her all day and night. But if you think it might help
me... Of course. Come, my boy. Let us meet the señorita.
Bastida Carlos had been studying intently the almost life-size portrait above the fireplace. Her pretty dark eyes were puzzled and her brows were wrinkled, as she reassured herself over and over again that this indeed was the portrait that she had seen in the boudoir of Maria Theresa, the portrait of King Louis XIV of France. A footstep behind her made her realize that she was not alone. She turned quickly.
Good evening to you.
Oh.
I'm sorry if I startled you. My uncle will be with us in a few minutes. He's ordering some refreshment. I believe you've come on a long, long journey.
Then you are...
Edmund Marchiali at your service, Mama, dear. I understand you are to be my new tutor.
Why, yes.
You seem surprised.
Surprised? My surprise almost makes me speechless, Your Highness.
Your Highness? Is that what you call the Spanish gentry? Here we are addressed as Monsieur.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. I think I understand. You wish to remain incognito.
Incognito?
Yes.
Mademoiselle, you speak in riddles.
If only you would make yourself clear.
Your Highness, I may be a stranger here. I may have only just arrived from Spain. But I happen to have seen your portrait once before. I know who you are, and I will keep your secret.
Edmund Marchiali stared at the Spanish girl in the greatest astonishment. What was she saying? What was the meaning of these strange words? Indeed, what is the meaning of this whole strange business? For apparently there is a remarkable likeness between King Louis XIV and young Edmund Marchiali. Make sure you hear the next absorbing chapter of The Man in the Iron Mask.
The Man in the Iron Mask, Episode 12 in a 1948 syndicated series. And that wraps up this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.